chapter 2. So we have been for a while in a study of Bible doctrine, looking at different subjects that the Bible teaches on, essentially seeking to find out what the Bible as a whole teaches about these subjects. And so we've worked our way through a number of subjects and now are on the final subject of our study of Bible doctrine, and that is the study of eschatology, or the study of the future, the end times and such. So this is message number 75 in our series. The title of this message this morning is Big Story Events. We are going to be looking at Genesis chapter 2, verses 15 to 17. And the Lord God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." So if we were to sketch out the course of a typical human life, it might look something like this: birth, school, work, marriage, children, grandchildren, old age, death. Now, we realize that not everyone's life is going to necessarily follow that exact course, but it's a pretty good general outline for just a typical human life from beginning to end. And these are actually points that could be plotted on a graph. If we were wanting to plot a graph of human life, then we have these points that could be. These would be turning points in that life, points that where there are significant changes. So we could apply this all the way throughout. I mean, obviously, life begins in the womb. Birth begins life outside of the womb. Starting school, that's a big turning point in a young child's life. And once they start school, then things are different. And they're not going to be like they were those first few years ever again. They're different, and they're going to continue on that trajectory. Well, getting out of school and entering into the workforce is another change that comes upon you. You know, no longer do you go to the cabinet and food magically appears there. No longer do you magically find clean dishes and clean socks and shirts that just seem to magically appear from somewhere. No longer does that happen. You've got to do those things yourself. And so life changes. Marriage and children and grandchildren and so on. These are, again, are all turning points. There's a significant change that happens with these events in life. And once that change has occurred, then you don't go back to the way things were before that. It can't be undone. So we can think of these turning points as events, and we sometimes might even call them life events. And if we're telling the story of a life, then that story would involve these kind of story events, these kind of turning points where these changes take place. Now, over the last several messages, we have been looking at the Bible's big story and major threads of that story, which could be thought of like the characters of the story. These threads are the entities that undergo changes in condition and or relationship from beginning to end. And so we have identified certain major threads of the Bible's big story and noted the changes that they experience from beginning to ending in the Bible. But now we're sort of asking a question: how does that happen? How do those changes come about? How do those threads go from creation in the beginning of the Bible to new creation at the end of the Bible? And that's what we are considering, beginning to consider in this sermon. Now, when I talk about the Bible's big story, I'm talking about the fact that the Bible reveals God's plan for His creation and how that plan is fulfilled by the end. So I summarized the Bible this way. The Bible's big story is the story of God, the heavens, angels, demons, the earth's land and sea, the plants and animals, and the nations of men on the earth, and how the connections, conditions, and relationships between them all change from creation to new creation. In other words, this is the story that the Bible is telling us. Now, that summary includes those major threads and major strands that we identified. God, the heavens, the spirit beings, the earth, and mankind. We identified those five major threads, and that's what the last several messages have been looking at, each of those threads from beginning to the end of the Bible. And I summarized each of those threads this way. The story of God is the record of how God created everything to display the full range of His attributes, from wrath to mercy, and to reconcile and redeem His creation from the curse of sin, so that He might dwell with His redeemed people on the renewed earth for eternity. The story of the heavens is the record of how space and all non-earth entities were created to display God's glory and to provide stability to the earth, as well as give signs of His coming in judgment and to be renewed for eternity. The story of the spirit beings is the account of special non-human beings God created to inhabit His creation and serve Him. While some sinned and will face eternal condemnation, the elect angels will never fall and will continue in eternity as they are. The story of the earth is the record of this planet God made to be inhabited by the world of life He created. And though cursed and defiled because of man's sins, the earth will be gloriously renewed and exist eternally in perfect harmony with all life upon it. The story of man is the record of the imagers of God created to mediate God's reign on earth, but who fell from that position, bringing the curse of sin and death into the world, and upon all who will eternally be redeemed if they believe and condemned if they don't. The story of the nations is the Bible account of how God purposed the human race to be grouped in diverse ethnic groups with entailed land territories that will be redeemed to glorify God as nations for eternity. The story of Israel is the account of the nation promised to and made from Abraham, who will inherit the land of Canaan promised to Abraham and will be the kingdom of the Messiah, who will reign eternally over the nations of the earth. So that is a summary of the last several messages as we have traced those threads from beginning to end in the Bible. So in Genesis 1 and 2, we see a very good creation. We see man and woman in the garden. And in Revelation 21 and 22, we see a new creation. And we see redeemed men and women living eternally with God on a new earth. So the question that we're asking now is, how do we get there? So these are the threads, and this is what we can trace from beginning to end as far as the changes that they undergo. But how do we get there? How do we go from the beginning to the ending? And that's what we want to look at in this message, and then the next messages to follow that will conclude this series of doctrinal studies that we've been doing. So in this message, I want to introduce the big story events of the Bible. These are the turning point events that make the changes in the past and present and future for God's creation. Now, we'll focus on the future events in this part of the study. But I do want to begin by introducing the concept of story events from the beginning of the Bible. And so we're going to do that in two parts in this message. First of all, looking back, and then secondly, looking ahead. So let's look back here in Genesis, and we'll start here. Genesis chapter 1, verse 31 says, "And God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good." So Genesis 1:31 tells us that God created the heaven and the earth, and then when God looked on everything that He had made, He said that it was very good. As we go into Genesis chapter 2 then, we're given further detail about the creation of man and woman, about them being placed in the garden, and the commands that God gave them. So at this point where we are in our text, which is Genesis chapter 2, verses 15 to 17, at this point, the creation was at peace and there was rest in the original created state. Man and woman were free from sin, and they were free from mortality at this point. Now, verse 15 tells us how God put the man in the garden he had made. It says, the Lord God took the man, put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. So he put the man in the garden, and then he commanded him to care for the garden. And this was an exercise of the rule that had been given to Adam in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 28. We'll see a further exercise of that rule if you go on in chapter 2, reading about him naming the animals and so on, and being given a wife and so on. Now, in verses 16 and 17 here in chapter 2, God gives Adam commands for Adam's food and pertaining to the trees of the garden. And he was commanded that he could eat of all the trees of the garden, but he was commanded to not eat of one tree. And that was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So one of the things that we take from this is that Adam's reign over the earth was a mediated reign. In other words, he was still subject to the universal lordship of God. He's still subject. God gives him a command. He says, don't do this. Now, he was given a consequence for breaking that command. He says in verse 17, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. He was given this consequence that he would surely die when he ate from the fruit of that tree. Now, that phrase, thou shalt surely die, is a repetition of a Hebrew root in the original. And the phrase could literally be translated as dying, you shall die. Dying, you shall die. In fact, Young's literal translation has it dying, thou dost die. Very close to that. Now, some would refer to this, what we're looking at here in verse number 17, some have referred to this as a conditional covenant. But it's never called a covenant in the Bible, this command that God gives, nor is it conditional. What the statement actually is in verse 17 is a prophecy. And not only is it a prophecy, it is in fact the first prophecy in the Bible, here in Genesis 2, 17. You see, Adam was not created subject to death. Adam was not already headed for death. Adam was, in fact, rather, death was not known in the creation at this point when this was spoken. So what verse 17 does is it foretells of a change, something new and something different in the world, in the creation that God had made. So this first prophecy then leads to the first fulfillment. And that's exactly what we find. This first prophecy was, in the day that you eat of this tree, you will surely die. Well, in Genesis chapter 5, we read that Adam, he did die. Not only did Adam die, but so did other men that descended from Adam and from Eve. So just looking at Genesis chapter 5, verse 5 says, and all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. Verse 8 says, and all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. Verse 11 says, and all the days of Enos were 905 years, and he died. Genesis chapter 5, verse 14 says, and all the days of Canaan were 910 years, and he died. Verse 17 says, and all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. Verse 20 says, and all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. Verse 27, and all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. Verse 31, and all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. So this prophecy was indeed fulfilled and continues being fulfilled as men and women die every day in this creation. Adam himself, we read, he died, and his descendants, they died. Though they lived a very long time at that time, he died. But of course, as you go forward in the Bible, you see that time getting shorter and shorter until after the flood, and it's essentially about remained the same since that time. So what we learn in Genesis then is that death is the common experience of all men. And as you proceed in Genesis, you'll find a number of terms and ways that this is referenced that refer to the fact that it is a common experience. So in Genesis chapter 25 and verse 8, telling us about Abraham, it says, "Then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people." Genesis 25:17 says this of Ishmael, who was the son of Abraham. "And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. And he gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people." Genesis chapter 35, verse 29. "And Isaac, the son of Abraham, gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days. And his sons Esau and Jacob buried him." Genesis chapter 49 and verse 29, Jacob speaking, says, "He charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite." And in verse 33, it says, "And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people." So we get reference in the book of Genesis that death has come now, just as was prophesied in Genesis chapter 2 and verse number 17. And death has come, and death is the common experience of all people now. Even, again, having long life, and even by the end of the book of Genesis, you see that life not being anywhere near as long. Well, then the question comes, how do we get there? So we have prophecy in verse number 17, and we have a prophecy of something that denotes a change. There's a change that will take place in the order of this creation. Something is going to come to Adam and Eve that will be a new experience and will pass from them on to their descendants. Well, back in Genesis chapter 2, in verse number 17, God commanded Adam, "Don't eat from this one tree. Don't eat the fruit from this one tree." And he also told Adam, he said, "When you do, you will die." So that prophecy then would be fulfilled through an event. It would be an act or an action of disobedience through which that prophecy would be fulfilled. God said, "In the day that you eat from that tree, you will die." Well, after the temptation by the serpent in the next chapter, in Genesis chapter number 3, this is what we read in verse number 6. "And when the woman saw that the tree," speaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, "was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also her husband with her, and he did eat." Exactly what God told them not to do in Genesis chapter 2 and verse number 17. So they broke God's command, and their immediate actions, as you go on reading in Genesis 3, reveal guilt and shame in Adam and Eve. They immediately experienced something that was new in the creation that they had not experienced. And then as you go on down in Genesis chapter 3, and you read of these various curses that God gave, here's what God said to Adam in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 to 19. "And unto Adam he said, Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life." Notice that. All the day. The days of his life are now numbered. "Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat of the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." It was through this act of disobedience that this prophecy in Genesis 2:17 was fulfilled. This event brought fulfillment to the first prophecy. But there's also more that we see here, because it wasn't just Adam who died. Not only did Adam die, but everyone born of him died as well. So in Genesis chapter 5, you get this generation, this lineage genealogy from Adam all the way to Noah. And what do we find repeatedly? That so-and-so begat so-and-so and then died. And then that one begat another and then he died. And then he begat another and then he died. And all the way down through this list. So this death that was prophesied in Genesis 2:17, it didn't just come onto Adam, but it came on to all of those who were after him. So this is the event that we refer to as the fall. We talk of it as original sin, and we looked at that much earlier in our study. Paul said in Romans chapter 5 and verse number 12, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned." So as Paul is commenting here in Romans chapter number 5 about this story event that happened, the fall into sin, which was Adam and Eve's disobedience and transgression of God's command, he says, sin, through this event, entered into the world. It wasn't there before. It entered into the world through this event. And by sin also came death into the world. It wasn't there before. It was a change. And it came about through this story event, just as had been prophesied. And as a result, we find that all people are born dead in sins. Paul refers to this in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse number 1 through Adam. So, this prophecy of Genesis 2:17 was fulfilled in that day, since Adam and Eve experienced a natural state of spiritual death. And they experienced mortality that meant they were then subjected to physical death, which they later experienced and have passed on to all of their descendants. So it was the fall, it was Adam's act of disobedience that was the turning point event. It was the turning point change as mankind was changed and unable to go back to that original state. Every sin that is committed by every person after Adam and Eve is not a repeat of the fall into sin. And Paul even talks about that again in Romans chapter number 5. He says that we have not sinned after the similitude or the likeness of Adam's transgression. We simply are not in his place that he was in. So that's an event. We have a prophecy that prophesies when Adam ate from the fruit, he would die. And then we have a fulfillment of that prophecy that Adam, in fact, did die. He died that day a spiritual death. He died later in a physical death when his body returned to the ground. And this prophecy was fulfilled by this event that brought about this change. Okay, so now we want to look ahead. Adam's sin changed mankind's natural state and condition to one of death by sin. None of us are born into this world like Adam and Eve were created. Rather, we are born into this world like Adam and Eve after they had sinned and fallen in the garden. But when we turn to the end of the Bible, so here we've got this prophecy, thou shalt surely die. And then we go proceed and we're reading all of these records and all of these people who died as we go through the book of Genesis. But if we turn over to the end of the Bible, in Revelation chapter 21, verses 3 and 4, we read, "And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." And in Revelation 22:3, it says, "And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him." So man goes from life which is what Adam had in the garden, to death, which is what he experienced because of his sin. And then we read to life everlasting, with death having been done away and no more curse. So in other words, the point is, after Genesis chapter 3, and we get this fulfillment of this prophecy in Genesis 2:17, afterward there are obviously other events. There are other events that take place that move these story threads from their beginning through their changes and to their end. So man started out not being subjected to death. He became subjected to death because of his sin. And then we can also read of a future for man where there will be no more death. No more will he be subjected to death or the curse. Well, since Adam's sin, death became the common experience of all men, just as Paul affirmed there in Romans chapter number 5, that death has passed upon all because all have sinned. So we looked at numerous statements about death in the book of Genesis, and there are many, many more as you could read through there. But however we read of one man after Adam who did not have that common experience. In fact, we read of one man after Adam who did not die at all. In Genesis chapter 5, verses 19 to 24. And Jared lived after he begat Enoch 800 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. And Enoch, his son, lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Enoch was born just like all other men. Enoch lived 365 years on this earth, a life that was just like other men. But Enoch didn't die a natural death. In fact, we read in other places confirmation of this, that he was translated, that he should not see death. He didn't die. Rather, it says God took him. He was caught up, or he was snatched away, using those Greek terms in that Greek translation. He was caught up by God. Well, where did Enoch go? Well, we can answer the question from later scriptures, obviously, about where Enoch went. But what does Genesis tell us about where Enoch went? Now, being snatched away by God implies that he was being taken by God to be with God. But of course, then that brings us to the question of where is God? And we get a glimpse of that actually in Genesis, in Jacob's dream, in Genesis chapter number 28, verses 12 and 13. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. So Jacob sees a ladder going from the earth to heaven. And after that, he sees these angels going up and down this ladder. He sees the Lord. In all caps, he sees Yahweh, which is the Hebrew word, standing above the ladder, or standing in heaven. This ladder went from earth to heaven. So he sees him standing in heaven. Well, Enoch was taken away. He was caught up by God. Therefore, he is with him in heaven. So we can see in Genesis that life after death is alluded to. And that comes out another way in this dream passage as well. When the Lord identified himself to Jacob, what did he say? He said, I am the God of Abraham and of Isaac. Well, Isaac, Jacob's father, was still alive at the point that Jacob had this dream. And he's hearing this voice. But Abraham, his grandfather, was dead. He was not alive at this time. And God said to Jacob, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac. Now, God would speak in a very similar way to Moses later when he appeared to him in the burning bush there in the book of Exodus. He would say that I am the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. And Jesus actually refers to this, God identifying himself to Moses that way. In Matthew chapter 22, verses 31 to 32, Jesus says, But as touching the resurrection of the dead, have ye not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. Now, this is the case where Jesus had this confrontation with the Sadducees, and they came to him with what they thought was going to be an impossible problem. They came to him with a situation of the woman that had married, and then her husband died, and married a brother, and husband died, and she ends up being married to seven brothers during her lifetime. And they said, now in the resurrection, whose wife is she going to be? You see, the Sadducees did not believe in a bodily resurrection and an embodied existence throughout eternity. They did not believe in that. They believed in some sort of a spiritual existence, ethereal, just very, very different from what we would even think of as an intermediate state of those that have died now. Sadducees didn't believe in a resurrection. So they came to Jesus with what they thought was an impossible problem. Oh, he teaches the resurrection like these other Pharisees do. So we'll give him this problem that maybe the Pharisees had been stumped by this during their debates. But Jesus was not. And he said, have you not read touching the resurrection of the dead? And he says that God spoke this word to Moses. I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Jesus says, God is not the God of the dead. What does he mean? Jesus is countering them with this identification to Moses as God saying, I am. And he is talking about the present tense in which God spoke. When God said that to Moses, he said, I am, meaning I am right now the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. All of those who were dead and had been gone a long time by that point, all of those who were awaiting the resurrection and that resurrected body life. And he says, God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. In other words, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are living, and they will be resurrected one day for an embodied resurrection life that will last through eternity. So this is the same identification. When God says this to Jacob, I am the God of Abraham, he's saying the very same thing that Jesus says he's saying to Moses. So we saw in Genesis then that this event, this action of Adam, this act of disobedience, this event brought sin and death into the world of men. And we see indications that this isn't the entirely unalterable state of mankind. Again, we get one man who is not subjected to that common death that all other men have experienced by the name of Enoch. We look at the end of the Bible and we see of those who will never die because death is no more. So we've already seen numerous prophecies as we've been talking about these story threads. We've referred to various prophecies about the future, and we see these changes in the end. But the question that we have come to is, what are the events that accomplish those changes? We have prophecy in Genesis 2:17. We have the event that's the act of disobedience by Adam that accomplishes this change. Death comes and death has passed upon all. Well, story events are those turning point changes in the unfolding of the Bible's big story that moves us from the beginning to the ending of the Bible. And that's what we're going to be looking at as we proceed in these messages. So let me just give you just one quick example. While Jesus was still on the earth, he began speaking of his going back to heaven and then future return. So Jesus was still here. So in places like John 14, verses 1 to 3, or Matthew chapter 23, verses 37 to 39. And we see this other glimpse in the book of Revelation right at the very end, chapter 22 and verses 7 and 17, where Jesus says, who is in heaven, that he is going to come again. So these are prophecies. The apostles, the New Testament writers, they also refer to this return. And in fact, I've read that there are over 300 mentions of the return of Jesus in the New Testament. So his return is an event that will bring about other events and bring about changes as they have been revealed in the Bible. So how do we go from life without death in the creation, in the garden, to death, extending all the way till we get to the end where there is death no more? How do we go? How do those changes come about? Well, it will come about through events like the return of Jesus Christ, these future events. And these future story events is what we're going to look at in the coming messages that will finish up this series of our doctrinal study. Events such as the return of Christ, the tribulation, the time of Jacob's trouble, the day of the Lord, the resurrections, the judgments, the millennial kingdom, the new heavens and new earth. As the Bible mentions all of these things, what are they? What's the nature of them? What's the timing of them? Have they already happened? Will they happen? What will it look like when they happen and such? Well, that's what we're going to cover in the remainder of this study with those messages.